Welcome to my podcast, Living with Ovarian Cancer. My name is Diane Evans-Wood and I'm one of many women who are living with ovarian cancer. I want to give women like me a voice to share with you what it's like to live with ovarian cancer. We will cover a whole range of aspects related to diagnosis, treatment, recurrence and, well, just about everything in between. I hope you find our honest, candid, but often humorous conversations not only useful, but also uplifting. So without further ado, settle down and listen to my conversation today. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Living with Ovarian Cancer podcast. It's a real joy to have you with me again today, so thank you for being here. I'm not sure if you're aware, but sadly, one of our teal sisters sadly died this month, and she was so young, so vibrant, that I find it really hard to take her loss on board. Be sure to listen back to Lexi Mestas, because she talks about her own experiences. She was an absolute whirlwind of energy and knowledge, and she vowed to share that because of what she went through. And I send my heartfelt love and condolences to Lexi's family and loved ones. She'll live on through her words, and her words will be a wonderful legacy through this episode on the podcast. Bless you, Lexi, for all that you gave to this world and this community. Now, it's so important to make sure that you subscribe to my podcast so that you get notified of all the new episodes. I don't want you to miss out on any of them. What I would also love is if you could leave a rating and review and let me know your thoughts on each episode. It's hard to know who's listening, but I know many of you are out there, and I'd just love to hear your thoughts and your experiences. Now, today I have the absolute pleasure, and it's an honour to be talking to Diane Boothby, and she has a very important story to tell us about her own personal experiences with ovarian cancer. But not only that, she's another whirlwind of energy and positivity in the ovarian cancer community, and she's spreading awareness of this insidious disease in very high places indeed. So let me introduce you to Diane. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, just going to just say, I think we've got a bit of an unstable connection, but hopefully we won't freeze too much. So, Diane, tell me a little bit about who you are, about, well, what makes you you?
Well, I do love being with my family because I've got the two grown-up daughters and four grandchildren. So that they are my life. And my husband, of course, I can't forget him. We've been married for 4 years. So obviously we've all had a lot of ups and downs, and we've all still trying to find the happy times and make the most of them. I like being with friends and eating out. That's one of my socialising, is eating, having a little drink and eating out with friends or with family. Yeah. Anything like that, I really do enjoy. Because of my, obviously, I've got the disability, so I'm not as free as I would like to be. But luckily, I've got the gift of the gab, and that helps me.
Oh, and you're using it really well, aren't you, that gift? So yeah. I know you. I just sort of indicated that you've been spreading the word in high places, but can you tell the listeners, and well, we're going to put this on YouTube, so the viewers as well, can you tell them about what I mean by that, in high places?
Yes, I certainly can, Diane. The House of Commons at the reception, and there's a lot of MPs there, of course.
Yeah.
I was introduced, I told my story. You could hear a pin drop. It was amazing. It was... Oh.
That is incredible.
Yes, and the experience, and people keep coming up to me and saying, that was so good, so moving. And I spoke to the NHS England, the men, and I actually said to them, has that made a difference, hearing it from me rather than me being a statistic? And they said, a big difference.
Of course, yeah. It brings it makes it so real, doesn't it? Because you could be anybody's mum, anybody's daughter, anybody, you know, anybody's friend, and they can relate to that far more than just a statistic, like you say. Do you know, I absolutely take my hat off to you for doing that, because I'm not sure I could do it. I don't think I'd be brave enough, but it takes so much courage to stand there, especially because there were lots of men there in suits, you know, and very official types. So very intimidating.
It's quite funny you say that, because I was in my wheelchair. So yeah. It's probably easier than if I was standing, maybe I might have been shaking. But because I can't stand for long, I was sat in the wheelchair. So, of course, I just got on with it, basically.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was also a very important day being a speaker there and knowing that it was making some difference. And then I made it on the NHS England East Anglia Cancer Alliance page as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of spreading around.
Yeah. Which,
that's what we're there for. We're there for people who we've lost as well. The ladies who we've lost who've inspired us. I said, you're an inspiration for what you do and your knowledge. So every one of us in the target ovarian cancer and every cancer group we go on, everyone seems to be an inspiration to each other.
Wow.
And that's what keeps us going, I think.
I guess I see what you're saying, because we've all got a little niche, haven't we? We all bring to us, we're all women who bring to this community different skills. We've got lots of different backgrounds, cultures, and I think that that really sort of enriches the community and gets our word out there. Thank you for that introduction, that's brilliant. Now, we're here to talk today about your ovarian cancer and your experiences. So can we go back to when this all started, regarding what symptoms you had and what happened? Did you go to the GP or did you end up in A&E? Everybody's story is different. So can you tell me about what your experience was?
Yes, I had the bloating for quite a long time and I couldn't eat a lot at one time. It was like I could eat half a sandwich for my lunch. I couldn't eat the whole sandwich, things like that. And I was still going out for lunch with friends and they were eating these big meals. And I was thinking, how can they eat all that? I'm so uncomfortable. Now, I do also suffer diverticulitis.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, it was put down to that. So they sent me down the route of the bowels, which obviously it wasn't. So that kind of, in my head as well, I thought, oh, it must be with bowels. And then what happened was my husband got diagnosed with bowel cancer through the NHS screening programme.
Yeah.
And we was going through the process of me struggling, wondering what was wrong with me as well. So when I went to the GPs again and I explained, I'd sent emails of my bloated tummy as well to the GPs. And I kept saying, there's something not right. I knew there was something not right. And then when I went to the GP, she said, oh, well, I'll refer you. But it wasn't on any urgent referral.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I thought it should be. I was getting to that point. It's not right. My husband's been diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
Not something you expect. And oops, it could actually be cancer. Because then it had come into our life. Cancer decided, yes, it would come and join us. So we asked for the CA125 blood test. There was no vials in the NHS.
I remember that time, yeah.
That was the time when I was struggling to be diagnosed. Oh. And so we found a private clinic not far from where we live. And my husband said, you've got to go and have your scan, get your CA125 blood test. He said he was going to go in for half of his bowel removed. So we knew we was facing his struggle. So we said, right, we've got to do this. So we did. And yes, cysts in the ovaries, also the CA125 blood test. They rang me the day after and they said, we don't want to alarm you, Mrs. Boothby, but have you got gynaecology in place? So I said, well, I have, but it wasn't down any urgent route. So they said, well, we think you need to let your GP know and you need to get this seen within the 2 weeks pathway. Mm-hmm. And that's how I then got to see the gynaecology at the hospital, who then thought it would be endometrioma. And he wasn't too worried. Mm-hmm. And then he said, well, we could wait. He said, or we could do the salpingo-oophorectomy. So right. I said, you're doing the bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy. I'm not waiting. I'm not sitting on this. And it's a good job that I did.
Yeah, I think as women, intuitively, we really do know when something's not right, don't we? And it takes quite a lot of courage to pursue the medical team and say, no, actually, you should do this because I know something's wrong. So thank goodness that you did.
Yes, I'm glad. I'm really glad because he would have waited another 4 months. So December 21, that's when I went in for the bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy at our local hospital. Mm-hmm. And then, so it was the histology from that diagnosed the cancer. So it was after that, I didn't know the staging of it exactly then, but they told me then I had to go to the city hospital and have major surgery, which is what I did in March 2022. So, of course, people call it the debulking surgery. Now, a lot of people get confused with that because I've had friends say to me, oh, well, when I had my hysterectomy, they have no idea what we go through. No. It's not just the hysterectomy. It's the omentectomy. It's the peritonectomy. I also have the cholecystectomy. There's so much involved and we're cut. Yeah. The incision is as far as you can go from
It's such major surgery, isn't it?
Yeah, and being in COVID times, I couldn't have family there, and I was also in, not critical care, high dependency unit.
Yeah,
which I knew I was going to be, but it was you don't realise how poorly you are, and what you've gone through. I remember going into the surgery at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't awake till 11 o'clock at night, and that's. They only told my husband at 11 o'clock at night that was okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, and with COVID, there's nothing, he was going through his chemotherapy. Oh, so it was quite, it was kind of a bit of a mind-blowing time, really. Yeah. It's, you know, you know you've got to face that alone, as he did when he was in hospital for 7 days he was in, and I couldn't see him. And then I was in 12 days and he couldn't see me. Yeah. So thank goodness for WhatsApp, you know, things like that. That's a big help in these times, isn't it? In the times we've gone through.
Gosh, that was a very stressful time there. I mean, for your husband to also be going through all that he was going through, and then of course you going through this. Definitely. What was your recovery like from the surgery?
Oh, it took quite a long time.
Yeah.
And I think because I've got the spinal damage anyway, and I still have pain from the scar. And they said, well, you know, everybody heals different because they cut the muscles and the nerves and and it's actually, I'm finding more trouble with the higher part of the scar is more painful in that area where they took the gallbladder out, funnily enough.
Oh.
Mm. So it's time will tell. I put weight on, though, Diane. Yeah. I mean, I thought I'd lose weight. But they put me on some different medication and I gained weight. So that was a bit, I think as a woman, you don't want that on top of everything. But then all my family say, why are you worrying? You're alive.
Yeah, well, that's right. I think that when we go through all the surgery and then often we, you know, pre-menopausal women, you know, suddenly lose their ovaries and we go into surgical menopause. And then, you know, all that goes with that, of course, we're going to put some weight on, you know, and then not to mention the treatments that we go on, you know, so I think that we have to cut ourselves some slack. Yeah. And it's really not easy to lose weight. I know that from my own experiences, you know, and how it makes you feel as well when you look in the mirror and you don't resemble yourself, especially when you look in the mirror and you don't have any clothes on, you can see the scars, you can see the story of your body, of what's happened. It's very hard, I think. And I think your friends are lovely to say, but you are alive. What does it matter? And it, in the grand scheme of life, does it really matter?
That's it.
It's psychologically, it's so intrinsically connected with women and our image, you know, image of a woman. So losing the female reproductive parts, did that affect you psychologically, or were you prepared for that?
Well, I was okay because I had gone through the menopause, and that was something. I think it was just get it out.
Yeah.
This actually did rupture inside, which didn't help. As we know, the little cells can escape and do what they want afterwards, can't they?
Yeah.
But that side of it, no, except I did feel after the surgery that I was going through the menopause again. It did feel like that. And now they've put me on letrozole, I feel like it's still happening again. It's kind of a vicious, we're on a vicious circle with that, because we know we'd rather take the drugs than the cancer come back.
Yeah.
Because obviously mine was low-grade serous carcinoma, as yours.
Yes.
And I was quite lucky I didn't have to have chemo, because as we know, chemo doesn't necessarily work on low-grade. So I was stage 1C2. In the end,
that's good.
So I just kind of got away with not having the chemo.
Yeah.
If it had been any further, I'd have been down that road.
Yeah.
So I think I was. So I'm really pleased that I did push them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the jury's out whether to use chemotherapy for low grade serous ovarian cancer. It still is the in the guidance for us to have chemotherapy. But for the listeners, the low-grade serous ovarian cancer is quite resistant to chemotherapy. It's not that it doesn't work at all. It's just that it doesn't particularly have the same effect as high-grade serous ovarian cancer. So often we do far better with targeted therapies or the estrogen blocker, aromatase inhibitors, like what you're taking, the letrozole, which incidentally, Diane, causes quite significant weight gain.
Yes.
So it's not your fault that you've gained some weight. You know, are you struggling with any of the side effects of letrozole at all?
In fact, I also have fibromyalgia. Some days, because of the letrozole, it does give the symptoms like the fibromyalgia. So I don't know if I'm having a flare-up or it's the letrozole. So really, as it's been hot, I haven't done a lot of movements anyway. So it's not, touch wood, should we say, I'm okay with it. And if it keeps as it is, I'll be able to cope, because I'm coping with the fibromyalgia well, the best I can. I have days when I can't move anyway and I am laid up. And like you say, I am out there raising awareness for ovarian cancer. But then the day after, I could be in bed all day. But I enjoy doing it. And when I'm doing it, I know it's helping people to save lives. Ladies are so unaware.
We still need to feel like we're involved with life, because I think it's so life-affirming, isn't it, to be involved with awareness and doing your best to make sure that other women know about ovarian cancer, because with ovarian cancer, it's not actually as prevalent as breast cancer in women. So far more women do get breast cancer, and there are an awful lot of campaigns for breast cancer for that reason. But for ovarian cancer, not so many women get that, and so it doesn't get quite the exposure. And very often, you know, when we see in March in the UK, we've got Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. Very rarely do you see anything about it on the TV, in the media. It's just the odd sort of pockets. Every now and again, you'll see something, but not the same as every day with breast cancer. You get something, you know, it's the pink ribbon everywhere. And it's getting the same with bowel cancer. If the media really embrace certain cancers, then they do get a lot of exposure and a lot of awareness raised. But it doesn't seem to be the same for ovarian cancer. So I just think that it's very difficult as women living with this disease to champion ovarian cancer. I know that's an odd word to use, but we have to, don't we? We have to champion our cause. So I really do take my hat off to you, you know, for all that you do.
I didn't know there was such a need. Obviously, you carry on with your life, you're doing what you're doing. I'd already had my spinal problems, so I was just coping with that. And the children was only young when that happened and had my accident. So it's kind of never thought cancer or anything. And I didn't know there was a need. I knew obviously about ovarian cancer and I did know the symptoms. And I was also lucky that I knew the smear test didn't cover it. Yeah. But since I've been doing what I have been doing with the awareness, the ladies that don't know, even nurses don't know the smear test doesn't cover them. No. And I was quite shocked. Yeah, my husband had an operation on his hand, and I have a leaflet wherever I go. Never go without leaflets. And I said, oh, I said, I know you're a nurse. I said, but this is what I do. I like to raise awareness. I said, but I'll just give you some leaflets. Yeah. And she had, I said, but you will know, won't you? The smear test doesn't cover you for ovarian cancer. She said, no, I didn't. Nobody is teaching ladies. How are they going to know if nobody's spreading that awareness? They go in there, they have the smear, and they think, well, I'm fine now. Yeah. They've no idea. And that was a big learning curve for me. Yeah. And I've had ladies thanking me. And they said, I've had the symptoms. So I've given leaflets. I said, do you take that to GP? My GP's fobbing me off. I said, well, take that leaflet. I think doctors in my area are getting a bit fed up. Well, these ladies go with these leaflets. But it's better that.
You can't let up, though, can you? Oh. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be okay. It's going to be down to something else.
Yes.
You know, the bowel, very often, the symptoms are very vague, aren't they, with ovarian cancer? And they could be attributed to lots of different things, and very often bowel-related issues, like diverticular disease, and the favourite, you know, irritable bowel syndrome. But if you've not, you know, at our age, I think if we've never had IBS ever before, and then we're suddenly told that, oh, it's because of IBS, I think we should be worried, because that's not right, actually. I'm just shuffling around because of my back pain.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. Yeah. My chair's electric. It'll move me up and down.
That's a really good idea. Yeah.
Well, we actually got it when I had my operation, because with having no spine muscles, I'm trying to get up and off things. It lifts me up and gets me out of the chair as well.
Yeah, that's really ideal for you, isn't it?
Because
you've had different illnesses or conditions before the cancer. So to a certain extent, you'd adapted to some of the disabilities, hadn't you, and the limitations, which is really good. What kind of support did you get, Diane, after all of the surgery and then started on letrozole? What kind of support are you left with?
Nothing.
No.
I didn't even get any booklets from the oncology nurses. Now they've got the booklets because I've took them in. I've had them all from Target Ovarian Cancer and Overcome. Yeah. And ladies now in my area are giving a lot of information. I was given nothing. Yeah. I was told about the Big C, which is our local charity for cancer, and Macmillan. So I had contacted them previous regarding my husband. But because it was COVID, everything was closed, so you couldn't go into a centre.
Yeah.
The main help was from Target Ovarian Cancer and Overcome, having the tea and chats, meeting other ladies who'd had ovarian cancer or still have ovarian cancer. I think that was a big help, because everyone then knows what you're going through. They understand how you feel. The hard part, your friends don't understand how you feel. They don't understand how it feels in your head, how you're emotionally affected. Whereas everyone in the groups with the tea and chat and ladies like yourself, Diane, that's how I met you. We all support each other.
Yeah.
And I think without that, I don't know, to be fair, what I would have done for support. So I think that's why I'm passionate about raising the awareness and I'm passionate in what Target Ovarian Cancer do and overcome.
They're both incredibly valuable, aren't they, the charities? Yes. They do so much for our community and I applaud them for that. Yeah. You know, definitely. I'll put links in the show notes for both of those charities. And we also are in the same support group on Facebook, aren't we? Low-grade serous ovarian cancer peer support group. So I'll put the link for that as well in the show notes. But that is actually affiliated with Cure Our Ovarian Cancer Charity, which is founded and led by Jane Ludeman in New Zealand. She's done a brilliant job. So, putting a low grade on the map, so to speak. Yeah.
There's a lot of people don't understand it at all, because as we've discovered, you're talking about 5% of ovarian cancer being the low grade. Mm-hmm. I had never even heard of it. I didn't even know that there was such a variant of ovarian cancer.
I know most people don't. I think people think, well, cancer's cancer. They don't know that there are actually subtypes of ovarian cancer. Well, all types of cancer, but we're talking about ovarian cancer. And, you know, they all respond differently to different kinds of treatments. In our cases, you know, chemotherapy isn't the greatest, but it's still used because low grade is so rare still. We know a lot more about it, but of course, you know, we're still needing to learn a whole lot more.
Definitely. I think there's a professor in Glasgow who's doing a lot of research on it.
Charlie Dawley.
That's it. That's the man. Yes. Yeah. I'm like, yes. That's
He's
brilliant.
A legend.
Yes. It's wonderful that we're not being left behind, because ovarian cancer in general has been left behind, and that's why it's still the silent killer.
Yeah.
And that's why the awareness is the most important. If ladies are not educated, it's not their fault. No. Nobody tells them. My surgery now, apparently, I've been told, because I did an awareness campaign at the surgery as well, my doctors, and apparently now the nurses do tell them when they have the smear, it doesn't cover them for ovarian cancer. That's all that's needed. If everybody did that, wouldn't that be wonderful? Ladies would know.
Yeah, I know. I think it's so important to get that word out there. But I think we are lucky in some respects in the UK, because, you know, we've got Charlie Gawley on our side, Professor Charlie Gawley in Edinburgh. But we've also got Dr. Susanna Banerjee at the Royal Marsden, who is doing amazing work with clinical trials and promoting low grade, as something that really needs to improve. We're lucky.
We end up going on the focus group, aren't we? We're important in the learning of the low grade, as for her, we have the patients who can tell her how it is for us. And that's what she wants to know.
That's a breath of fresh air, isn't it? Because there is a very senior consultant that she wants to know about what we are dealing with, what we've experienced, and she's really valuing what we have to say. Yeah, I know, that is so brilliant.
We all said thank you, what a wonderful, what she's doing, how lucky that we've got her on our side now.
I agree. So from a support point of view, How has your husband and your family coped with this? Have they had any support? Have they needed it?
They don't have. But one daughter doesn't like to really talk about it. The oldest one had to take me. She's 43, our eldest daughter. And she had to take me to a lot of my appointments. So she went through it with me. And she also, because she lives nearest to us, she also had to take my husband for the chemo. So she's been through a lot with us, with it. In fact, we're trying to do nice things now. We went to London, me and her, and we went to the Shard. She pushed me in the wheelchair, went on the train, and then we went to Marco Pierre White's restaurant. So we're trying to, I do talk about it to them, but not over, because we want to enjoy now the time that we have as more as enjoying time, because she's been through a lot with us. And the youngest one, she lives an hour away. So it's been a lot harder. She works full time and an hour's drive, and then it's an hour's drive to the hospital. So that's why the one who lives 10 minutes up the road really has been doing the most in the terms of having to do, if you know what I mean, as she's been here. In terms of support, I don't know, because they don't really say, and it's hard. My husband did the Macmillan counselling, as I have now. Yeah. I'm on that at the minute.
Yeah.
But he didn't feel it was for him. But the only thing we can, the good thing, sounds funny, the good thing we can talk about, my husband, we can talk about cancer together and how we feel. It's like when they said to him he's in remission, and then they said to me, no evidence of disease.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm happy. And then you're like, but I'm not as happy as I should be. Why don't I feel happy? Where is that? It's a weird feeling.
Do you know why you don't feel so elated about that? I mean, obviously you are happy that you've reached that point, but is there a reason why you're...
I think it's the knowing it can come back.
Yeah.
And obviously, no evidence of disease, but then you've got a pain here or something there, and then you're thinking, is it? Because as you know, we're living with that all the time.
Yeah.
We're living with knowing it can come back, but we've got to live at the same point.
It's a balance, isn't it? There is a high recurrence rate with ovarian cancer, but at the same time, we have to live our lives, because it's a gift to be, we're gifted with the gift of life, aren't we? Because of the surgery and the treatment. And it would be such a shame if we didn't use that life, you know. But it's very tough, I think, for women that have had ovarian cancer because of the high recurrence rate. And that might be because in the back of your mind, why you didn't feel quite as happy as others might think that you would.
I think friends, you just think it's over and done with. You're better now. Yes, I'm better. I've no evidence of disease, but how do I feel? I don't feel like a person who's better. I feel like someone who's very lucky, but I can't say the word better because it doesn't seem, because you're still living with it. It's part of your life now. Changing and evolving as a person. You've had to leave some people behind who weren't there to support you. That I found very hard. Some friends I haven't seen in 2 years. They've not even been near and don't live far away. That has been very hard. But then I've had some amazing supporting friends. So I've just got to embrace the friends we have got and be thankful. But it doesn't mean you don't hurt. It's hurtful. And there's... don't tell you any reason or any, you know, you just haven't seen them, which is a bit weird. When previously,
I agree. I think it's difficult for friends because they have stuff going on in their own lives, and you know, they might not be able to cope, or it's all just too much, you know, in the general life scheme, and they just lose interest, kind of, you know. But that's a reflection on them and not us. It's not because we've done anything wrong. I think you do certainly find out who your friends are, don't you?
Oh, God, definitely, yes. We're very lucky. We had a friend who lived around the corner, and she'd bring roast dinners and things like that. And then we had other friends that brought food to put in the freezer because, yeah. I mean, at one time, Paul was having his chemo, and I was had the self-pingo oophorectomy. Yeah. I was only just recovering, and this was Christmas Day. And because of his having his chemo, they told him he couldn't have the grandchildren. He wasn't allowed for them to come near him because of COVID and coughs and colds.
Because of his immune system being compromised. Yeah.
So yeah. that was really hard, actually. Oh. We did an early Christmas because we've got young grandchildren. So they're the youngest. They go from age 15, our eldest, beautiful girl she is, and then 11-year-old, then down to, she's just 7, down to 5. 5-year-old who's just started school. And was so excited picking him up from school for the first time on Friday. Now, that is what makes me happy.
Yeah. I can see in your face that you absolutely adore them.
Oh, yes. So time with them is special.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. The older ones, to actually spend time with them, we have to go to their favourite restaurant. Which is, I don't know if it's that. Is that advertising if I mention where we go?
You can do that. Yeah, that's fine.
It's not my favourite place, but it's their favourite place, Pizza Express.
All right.
So to spend some quality time with them, every now and again, we say, right, when do you want to go out? We know where you want to go, or is there anywhere different? No, Grandma, Pizza Express.
Yeah.
So that way we get time sat around the table talking to them.
Yeah,
because if you visit them at home at that age, they're in the bedrooms, you know, and they'll come and say hello, but you don't have that quality time. Mm-hmm. So we make sure once every few months we make sure we take them to spend that time with them, and then they have to have a waffleopolis after, which is ice cream and full of sugar and all sorts of things, and they love it. So the younger ones, they're different in the way that. They're just happy coming, playing, or playing games and doing stuff. The youngest one, he was always a cuddler. Oh, I miss you, Grandma. Mm. But now we've started school, it's a bit different.
Yeah, and they do change.
Yeah, and we've missed a lot of time, not only with COVID, it was then cancer. So it was like everyone were coming out of COVID. We weren't coming out of COVID. We were still in the COVID world because it was hospitals, masks all the time. We couldn't go in shops easily. So we are recovering from the surgery. So our world lasted longer. The COVID to us, what was 2 years, was like 3 years. So we did miss a lot of time with the grandchildren, the younger ones especially.
Yeah.
So the
Do the grandchildren know about your diagnosis? I mean, obviously they've got two grandparents with cancer. So. Yeah. Are they aware of what's happening?
The older ones are, because she's 15.
Yeah.
And of course, ovarian cancer. We want them to be aware.
Yeah.
And so the two oldest grandchild are aware. The youngest, I'm not sure if they actually know what cancer is. All they did, especially the little boy, he's so inquisitive, they just said, "Pop, pop, can I see your scar?" Pop showed his scar. Grandma, can I see your scar? Showed me scar. He went, "Ooh, that's a big one." That was it. End of.
Yeah. Children, depending on their ages, have a different understanding, don't they? And there is help out there for talking to children if anybody does need that, because we've got the Child Bereavement Trust and we've got Winston's Wish, that are very, very important organisations in this world. But also any of the cancer charities would be able to help point you in the right direction to talk to them. It was part of my role when I was a palliative care CNS, talking to the children or empowering the parents or those closest to the children to talk to them, because they saw me as a, you know, somebody in authority. So they don't generally open up to that. But yeah. But it's, I can tell that you're an extremely close family, and it is so lovely to see, you know, your adoration for them. So how are you today? I mean, I know that you're taking letrozole.
Yes.
And obviously you're taking that indefinitely, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, to hope it doesn't come back.
Yeah.
Because obviously I had to check the histology, whether I could have letrozole, which they did check the histology. And yes, I could have it. She said it was my choice. It's up to you. We can't guarantee it won't come back just because you're on letrozole. So, but I thought I'd rather have the chance of it not coming back, obviously.
Yeah.
And try the letrozole. So I'm only on my second month of it. So I am early days. But the very first few days was the hardest, I think, on it, because I did notice some changes. It seemed worse. But now everything's settled down because I'm on gabapentin and I'm on lots of drugs for my spine anyway.
That's good.
So I am on painkillers. So I think that maybe helps.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, because, I mean, obviously with the your fibromyalgia and then with letrozole, with the terrible bone aches, that, you know, obviously you need some pain relief for that.
Yes.
And keeping moving is good, because I think you stiffen up, don't you, when you're just sat for long periods. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very lucky because I'm a member of a spa.
Yeah.
And they have a lovely big jacuzzi. I don't go to the gym. Obviously, I can't do anything like that. But I do float in the hot water in the jacuzzi.
Yeah.
And if I'm in on my own, it's lovely because I have a little noodle and I can just get my body moving, just wiggling my fingers, wiggling my legs, and just feeling... I call it the pain flowing through my body.
Yeah.
So I'm relaxed, but the pain's there, but it's flowing. It's not an annoying pain as it can be, because I've got the nerve damage in the spine, and that is, it's like permanent sciatica, and that is horrible.
Yeah.
So I feel I'm lucky that I am a member. I joined, it was quite well before COVID, but we decided it would help because I used to go to a neurological class with the hospital at the local swimming pool and the baby pool, and we used to do gentle exercise and walking in the water. So since COVID, that has not happened again. So I took it on myself, and so that I feel very lucky. My husband takes me; he doesn't like the water, but I love water, and just being in there, and it's outside, so I'm listening to the birds. In the next field, there's some cows. It's just open, and it's near the RAF base, so sometimes we get the planes. It's just a bit of everything in there, and it's that is me being refreshed and being relaxed. That's my place to go, should we say.
And you mentioned also that you get some of the menopause issues. Do you get the drenching sweats? Do you get those? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And this weather, my hair just wet through.
I'm the same. I have, because I know what's going to happen. I've got my tea that makes me feel very hot.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden I can feel it whoosh.
Whoosh.
And so I've got these little sort of towels. They're meant to be for taking makeup off, but I use them, and one's wet, so I can just put them on my neck if I need, because I do get hot with it, because I every now and again I have to turn off this ring light because it just gets so very, very hot. And then I also have a dry one as well.
That's good.
Just keeping prepared. You have to do what you can. Obviously, because we couldn't have a fan on, could we, when we're recording? Otherwise, we'd never be able to hear each other.
I have got one on.
But my fan, it's one of those Dyson ones, and I daren't put that on because I think that it would pick up on the microphone. So I thought, I don't want to ruin your podcast. I can't hear yours.
Well, that's all right then. Because that was the thing I was going to ask at the beginning, because it is on law. It is helping. It's just helping that bit. So when he gets like ringing wet, my hair's curly anyway, and I thought maybe I should just embrace the curls and just scrunch it or something like I used to do, and just put a headband in, just especially when it's so hot, just to go up.
I think these cold water on your wrists and feet in a bowl, cold water, those sorts of things help. But at night time, it's horrible because keeping cool, even just sleeping with a sheet over you, you know, and if you've got somebody next to you, you know, they're going to be shivering because you can't keep the fan on all night, you know.
Well, that's one thing that we do have to have separate rooms now.
Yeah.
My husband.
But there are other the medications that we can take for hot flushes as well. So, but, you know, obviously we're taking medication anyway, and it just seems to be like just another thing to take. But it is just an absolute pain, isn't it? Yeah. What about insomnia, Diane?
Oh, that can vary. Some night I can be 4 o'clock in the morning and I've not got to sleep. And then other nights I can get to sleep quite easily. In fact, I've fallen asleep with the television on.
Yeah.
So it's quite variable. But when it does come, the insomnia, that is awful. Because 4 o'clock in the morning, well, this morning, actually, I was awake at 4 o'clock in the morning. It was the other way. I had fallen asleep. Then I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I took some medication. Thought, oh, I'll go back to sleep. Oh, it took ages. I finally did. But then it was time to get up. So you can't win.
I know, because letrozole, all the aromatase inhibitors, cause insomnia. And it's one of the hardest things because we know we need a good night's sleep for healing and health and fitness and all the rest of it. But it's so difficult, isn't it, with all the other things that happen. And then to have insomnia.
We're in a revolving door, aren't we?
Yeah. I think it's just about sleep hygiene, doing what you can to relax at night time, doing all those sorts of things so that you're as relaxed as you can then. Sometimes I just listen to podcasts or whatever, you know, on my with the earplugs in. So, well, earbuds, I should say. Yeah. Out of all of this then, from a life lesson point of view, we've touched on some of the fact that we change, don't we, when we've had a cancer diagnosis. We don't kind of go back to the normal that people think that we do, you know. We don't just suddenly move on from it and think, oh, we're better now. And I just wondered what kind of lessons has it taught you in life, Diane?
Well, quite a lot. Obviously the main thing is that the close family is the most important.
Yeah.
And obviously friends around you. And it's taught me I'll make the effort to do more with them and things like that. Because, you know, they could have been without us. And then I just think, how would they feel? How would they, but what I'd also do when we buy presents, try and buy something memorable that they'll remember us by.
Yeah.
And like I said, the oldest one, she's really cute. Got this little hedgehog, one of them little, Swarovski hedgehog crystal. And she's loved it from when she was little. She always loved it. So for her last birthday, we had the box and everything for it. And I said, and she called him Spikey. But I said, Spikey's yours now to look after. Yeah. I got Spikey from my mummy, and now it's your turn from your grandma. Look after
him.
So
it's made you think about the future and your legacy then.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Because it's not something you always think about, but we do now. So it's like something for them to keep. And for her, that was amazing because it meant a lot because it's from her childhood as well. And I always said to her, when you're old enough, you can have Spikey. But I didn't want, because it's you know, Swarovski crystal. So you don't want a child spoiling it. So she's got that. So we're trying to do different things, think of different things with them. It's like the grandson, we still don't get to see much football enough because he's always further away from where we are and it's early on in the morning and we're not good in the morning.
No. But
we want to kind of try and things like that. We want to make more effort.
Yeah.
Because you can easily go back into, oh, well, I don't need to get up or do this.
Yeah.
You have to make yourself a little bit more. Also, I'd like to, it's made me think, right, I want to get out and do more.
Yeah. Yeah. Embrace life and really make the most of it.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Life becomes so much more precious, doesn't it? I mean, it's always, for me, I learned a lot from my patients, and it always made me look at life in a different way. But having this cancer myself was completely different and changed me. And I couldn't agree with you more how much you appreciate everything around you, what you have. And you want to experience so much, don't you, within reason?
Yes.
Have you tried to go abroad yet at all? I wondered about if you've managed to get insurance, well, travel insurance.
This is a bit of a story that my daughter, the youngest one, is going on holiday in July the 30th, and she asked us to go. Will you and my dad come? Portugal, we love Portugal. So I really wanted to, but I'm having a test at Papworth Diane for my heart.
Right.
So I've just had two big scans, and then I'm waiting for a 24-hour heart monitor. Well, there's no way I can fly until that's sorted. So I thought, but it's not the cancer stopping me now. It's the heart.
Oh, that's such a shame.
So I've never been right. I actually did have COVID, and I've never been right since. When we started going out, I went to a wedding reception. I've never been, you know, we hadn't been going places. Went to a wedding reception, got COVID, couldn't believe it. So, and I was really poorly, but I didn't know I should have had, there's an infusion you can have that helps you. I hadn't got my letter. My husband had had a letter. I got my letter after I've had COVID. Yeah, if you get COVID, you should get this infusion, the medication. For the autoimmune suppressant, as I think. And of course, I didn't. So since then, and I do get breathless a lot more.
Yeah.
And I did have a problem. They thought it could be angina.
Yeah.
So now I feel stuck because, and I said to him, can you please hurry up this 24-hour heart monitor?
Mm-hmm.
That's only at our local hospital. This has gone on from February.
Yeah.
I've been to Patworth in that time, Royal Patworth Hospital, which is a brilliant heart hospital, had my scans, and now I'm just waiting for this simple. So I know I'm
How frustrating.
Yeah, I know the insurance won't because of heart problems.
Yeah.
Until I've got any definition of the tests and proof that, no, everything's fine, I'm not going to get the insurance, am I?
Well, from a cancer point of view, like you say, you'd be okay at the stage that you were at and how stable that you are. Then it's such a shame that COVID created these problems. Yes. And now, you know, you're having to sort of forego more memory making with your family. That is such a shame.
I really wanted to go. That is upsetting, I have to say. Yeah. But I've just got to, because all through all this, it's been like we tried to book somewhere, do something, and we've had to cancel it. Then it's been like that. Obviously, that once we were both diagnosed, it was like, don't book anything, there's no point. But we are this weekend, we've got an exciting little weekend. We're going over to Rutland Water, near where my daughter lives, and we've booked a lodge for the weekend with a hot tub.
And sounds lovely.
We're doing it. That there was not even a question. We knew there's nothing there. Obviously, my daughter and the family are there.
Just imagine you've got all your family there.
Yes, with the hot
just
tub.
You and your family.
Children love getting in the hot tub. So for them, it's exciting. Me and my husband, we're picking them up from school, taking them up to the lodge. And we've got to make sure they've got the little swimming gear and everything, and they'll be in that jacuzzi as quick as anything. That's to us, that them times are precious anyway. So knowing that we probably won't get on this holiday now, I just said we're doing it, that's it.
Yeah, that's great. Have a wonderful time. You know, you touched on something that I don't want to forget to bring up here. You said about making plans and having to cancel them. And that's something that actually, you know, comes to mind when you're talking about friends and making plans. I found myself that I've cancelled so many times that some friends now don't even bother asking me anymore. And it's not that I cancel because I don't want to go. It's because I just feel too exhausted, or I've gone through treatment that makes me feel too ill, or I feel embarrassed, you know, because of the treatment I was on, trametinib made my skin so bad. And so we lose friendships because we cancel so often as well, don't we? I don't know if you found that.
I think I was quite lucky because a few of my friends understand with my spinal problems anyway. Mm. I can be laid up. I can seize up where literally I have to have diazepam. I can't move. So that's normal. That was quite normal. With some of my friends were really good. They said, look, you know, if you're not up to it, don't worry if you have to cancel.
Yeah.
So I was looked at, that was already happening in my life anyway. So, and some of them, we have like ladies who lunch group once a month. And some of them had been really supportive.
Yeah.
And some don't even seem to have acknowledged. It's weird how they all react differently.
Yeah, but then also you look well and people can't believe the underlying conditions and the limitations that you've got. I have the same thing, you know, if you, and very often with ovarian cancer, we do look well until we're not, you know? Yeah. And so there's a lot going on underneath the surface.
Nobody sees that other bit, Diane, do they?
No. But
nobody sees you at home laid up. They only see the Diane that's out there.
No.
They don't see the other Diane.
That is,
you know, can't get out today, because if you're out and smiling, they think you're fine.
Yeah.
They don't know what you have to deal with the day after because you've done that. You're exhausted.
Yeah, exactly. And what we see on social media as well is the best of people, because they're not going to share when they're lying in bed crying because they're feeling fearful of the future, or that they just had bad news, you know. I do admire people on social media that share, you know, the rough with the smooth. And I try to do that as much as possible. But it is a bit tough when you've got family members on social media that find it very difficult, I think, to read that sort of thing all the time. But yeah, the underneath the surface, it isn't always what you see, is it?
Yeah. But one friend did say to me, and that was really nice. We had a bad lunch. And then she said to me, she texted, and she said, it was great to see you, because obviously I don't make them all, like every month once. She said, it was great to see you. She said, and you're looking great, girl, and you are doing well. Mm-hmm. She said, so you keep it up. And that was like, to me, that meant a lot.
Yeah.
That somebody acknowledged that it is hard work, what I'm, you know, it's easier to keep yourself in your pit, not get up. It's harder to get up and be brave.
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort, doesn't it? More than anybody could ever realise. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think that's a really positive note to finish on, really. Your friend being so supportive in saying that to you. So we're just left with those fun questions. I don't know if you've got a minute to answer.
Yeah,
bless you. So if you could have dinner with somebody famous, whether living or no longer with us, who would it be, Diane?
You might laugh at this. Gino Di Campo.
Really?
Italian. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I love Italian food. I would like him. Yes, it could explain the cooking process. He could just listening to him speak and having fun, because he's a cheeky little man, he is. And I like the fun side of it.
And he doesn't mind getting his kit off either.
No,
and he'd probably come along, he'd probably cook you dinner in just an apron or something.
Yeah, we'd have to have a bit of fun. I'm not serious in thing. He's the kind of character that would make me laugh. So I like people can make me laugh. And he would, just watching the show, when was it Gino and Gordon Ramsay.
Just watching there were three of them, weren't there? I didn't watch
that.
That
was hilarious. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice choice. Yeah. What was the last book you read, or is there a book that you'd recommend that everybody reads?
Now, that I cannot answer because I don't read.
Right.
I watch movies rather than read.
Yeah.
Because, well, holding books, I don't need to see them. Yeah. My hands aren't perfectly, and I drop things. I literally, I can have something, even with the iPad, or I have it in my hand, maybe the phone, and my hand drops. So, because I've got a neurological condition as well, you see.
Yes, yeah.
So, but I like, there's a Netflix, it's called Heartlands. Series, I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes.
Me and my husband, we both love that. That's like, when the season's finished, we're a bit, I've got no more Heartlands to watch. So we more watch the movies rather than read.
Yeah, yeah. You can totally immerse yourself then, not causing any pain to your hands and what have you. Yeah. And lastly, Diane, where in the world would you say is an absolute must to stay in a lifetime?
Ooh, now then. My places are quite simple where I love. I love Portugal, Vilamoura, the Algarve. I think it's beautiful. The people are lovely. And you feel safe. I've been there, I felt safe. And the other one is Fuerteventura. They're my two go-to places.
Yeah, yeah. Both lovely places I've been. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm not really interested. I have been to Australia. I have a sister who lives there. But I found it so hard. The journey, we stopped at Dubai.
Yeah.
And everyone raves about Dubai. I like the culture of Portugal.
Yeah.
I like the way they cook, the way they love the passion. They've got a passion for food.
Yeah.
I enjoy that, and they're very friendly. So every time I've been, I've really felt comfortable and safe. Even in the wheelchair, when we go there. We usually have a mobility scooter. Yeah. There's a hotel right near. You've got the beach that way, and you've got the marina that way.
Yeah.
And we've usually been with family, so of course that helps as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so very much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you giving up your time, Diane, and sharing your story and little nuggets of wisdom. And keep on with the campaigning.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Lots of love to you. Thank you for listening today. To hear future episodes of this podcast, please go ahead and subscribe now. I look forward to sharing more inspiring conversations with women who are living with ovarian cancer. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other, and enjoy all that life has to offer.